Hello everyone and welcome to the next in our podcast series, Coping with the Coronavirus. Today I'm joined by Susie Baker, who is the director of the Wainfleet office at Magdalen College School. Thank you so much, Susie, for joining me today.
Nice to speak to you, Lou.
Thank you. And Susie is just going to share with us some of the things she's been putting into place since the coronavirus hit a couple of weeks ago, and things have changed for us since then. So initially, Susie, what has your school done to respond to the current situation? What have been your sort of immediate priorities from a development perspective?
Well, I think like everybody else, there was a pretty quick focus on events and the events programme. I think we felt it was quite unfortunate. The Easter holidays just before and just after were a big time of events for us, including a choir tour to the US. So we had some US fundraising lined up. So managing those cancellations and letting people know, you know, all was happening very quickly. And then at the point where it was clear that the school was closing, we had to work quite swiftly to think about what we would need for homeworking for some weeks off site. And we weren't used to working at home collectively as a team, so that needed a lot of IT support. But it also made us realise that there are some things in the office that we do, particularly around gift processing, where you have to be on site as things stood in order to be able to do things like direct debits. So it led to quite a lot of questioning of our systems, really. And then at the point when the school closed, we were thinking very much about our alumni as a community, as our parents, pupils, you know, how could we help in the weeks ahead? And I think particularly for our A-level year group, our upper six, they'd lost all those rites of passage around going on study leave, doing their A-levels, coming back and celebrating. So how are we going to celebrate their transition from being a pupil to an alum when we couldn't do the events and the celebrations that would sit around their A-levels? We still don't have answers to much of that. But, you know, it's important that we keep thinking about what feels right for them too.
Yeah, it's a really important group to remember, as you say, the sort of those that would have traditionally have kind of finished school much earlier than they'd anticipated, and that journey into the next stage of their life. And I suppose that brings me on to my next question about how you're reaching out to your community sort of now, so parents, alumni, students, and how you're planning to continue to support them and engage with them in the future.
Yes, so the way things are working at the moment, and I'm sort of speaking to you in sort of week two of the school closing. So one of my senior colleagues on the teaching side is communicating with parents every day. He sends out a letter every day, as it were, even if there is no news, just to make sure that everybody's in touch and knows what's happening. And I think that's been incredibly helpful for the current school community. I mean, for our alumni, we sent out an e-newsletter the day after the school closed, describing the school closing. But then we waited a full week before sending another communication. And at that point, a week later, we sent on the master's closing address to the pupils, which was really, you know, asking the pupils to take care of themselves and talk about how much we would miss them. She wrote an amazing address, which is on the school website. But we felt that if we sent that to alumni straight away, we'd get responses back in, which then she and we would need to be handling at what was quite a pressured time for the school. So I think in waiting a week, we wanted to sort of pace the way we were communicating with people. And we're doing that again this week. We waited another week before sending something again. And I guess that's something that we're all going to have to judge, really. I mean, we're all anxious about our older alumni who are perhaps living alone or might be glad of a chat. But my concern is that we balance keeping in touch with people, but not bombarding them early and then sort of running out of steam once we get into the period after Easter. So I think that sort of pacing of communications is a really important piece, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I was thinking about that in terms of the shift, obviously, to online communication just over the last 2 weeks and sort of being somewhat bombarded, I suppose, by sort of WhatsApp messages, FaceTime messages, you know, emails. And actually, it's important for schools to think through in a much more structured way so that you don't have that sense so there's a very structured and strategic approach to your communication, which seems really important. And I suppose coming on to then now, what's been the biggest impact or challenge for you and your office over the last, as I say, very early stages, but the last couple of weeks, and what steps have you taken to manage this?
I think we have, like everybody, we've been learning how to work as a team when we're not all together. There have been issues around learning to use Microsoft Teams, but learning how to meet together and to work together. But I think also there's a really important piece that we're all in different situations at home. You know, some of our team have younger children, some have other caring responsibilities. Sometimes we're juggling laptops in different households. So I think that sense of we need to take care of ourselves, I think is also quite important. We don't need to rush at doing all of these things. We also need to have some pace. And I think it's fair to say at the end of the first week of working at home, when we all talked again on Monday, we were saying how great it had been to have a weekend to feel that you could sort of step away from the machine and just focus on your family or just focus on being in the garden or just focus on reading a book. And I think that care of ourselves is a challenge, and we need to keep that on our agenda. I mean, I think in terms of the office and the responsibilities of the office, I mean, there are particular things around fundraising that I think we need to be very sensitive about and take great care over. The piece around fundraising, I think, that I want to reflect on is how we as senior fundraisers keep in touch with sort of policy and key school developments. Because of course, when you're in the school, you know, you walk around, you sit by somebody in lunch, you know, you have regular meetings with senior people and you hear what's going on. So you've got stories to tell, but you also discuss these bits which are about your strategy or you know, development somewhere else in the sector or the policy pieces. And I think if we're going to sort of steward some of our major benefactors through these times, we need to make them feel really engaged at the highest level. And I'm sure that they will want to know, you know, are our families struggling? You know, do we know there are more people in hardship? Do we see some people being concerned about continuing next year? You know, what are we doing as an institution to help the communities around us? And I think how we as development offices glean that information from our organisations is also going to be harder in the weeks ahead. I think, you know, those aren't issues that we'd share in our mass communications and our e-newsletters necessarily. But for our sort of close friends, it's really important that we understand what's going on in the life of our school. And I think we need to think very hard about how we replicate that at a time when we're not having face-to-face conversations.
That's a really important point there around the sort of internal communication, isn't it? Those internal relationships that perhaps happen by, you know, those conversations that you have in the staff room, those conversations you have over lunch, which are sort of taken away by working in a more virtual world, and keep, how do you create those opportunities to have those conversations still and not just thinking potentially of the external sort of audience and our community outside of the school, but also our community within and maintaining those relationships. That's really important to kind of reflect on, I think. And I suppose then my next question is looking to the future, and I appreciate that this is sort of something that's maybe a little bit early to do, but sort of how do you envisage your development strategy changing over the coming months? And, you know, have you already started considering what you might do differently, or what new activities you might introduce to generate interest or potentially longer term income from some of your sort of stakeholders in your community?
Well, I think that's been a really big piece for us in the last couple of weeks. We had just sent out our donor report, which we usually send out in sort of February, March, which details the impact, of course, that philanthropy has had on the school. And with it was an ask for bursaries, and it was a precursor to our telethon, which was going to start at the beginning of April and run through the Easter holidays. So what had been a major sort of fundraising piece for us around bursaries had been some very active messaging in the couple of weeks leading up to the shutdown. So the first step has been really to put some messaging up on the website and in our e-newsletters, you know, to describe the fact that bursaries, of course, are going to be needed in the future, and hardship funds are probably going to come into play really pretty soon. But that we were encouraging people to support charities and organisations in their local communities that had an immediate need for support now. And I think that's right, isn't it? You know, even if we have set up all our fundraising plans, it's the immediate need of the communities that we serve and the communities that we live in that have to take priority. But I think expressing that and writing that up on the website was actually really and really important thing for us to do. And I think it's also signaled that as an organisation, we want to be responsive to those needs. So we've had calls for our staff to be volunteers for some of the organisations that we're involved with anyway. So things like our community larder, volunteers to staff that to make sure that food is distributed. You know, just being sensitive to those partners that might be, you know, in our community service programme. And we've had calls from people who know we've got 3D printers on site, donating equipment to the hospital. All of those sorts of things have to be high priority in the short term. And they just have to be. It feels like the right thing to do. And then I think in the longer term, I feel like we really do have to use our resources well to be keeping in touch with people. We've got a very good school archive, and one of the happier pieces of news at the moment is that the school archive has just been accredited by the National Archives. We think it's the first school archive to have done that, and as part of our sort of celebration of the kite mark, if you like, from the National Archives, we're going to create a section of the archives called the Pandemic Papers. And the idea is that we're creating resources there that can be used by researchers in the future, by teachers in the future, to really describe what life was like during this time. And so that I think gives us a way of drawing in some of our alumni. We're not just keeping in touch with them just to check in on them. We want to ask them to do something and to contribute, which will perhaps allow them to reflect on where they are as well. And I think that sort of give and take of, you know, they're adding their reflections and we're talking to them will, I hope, create a strong relationship for when we start to think about our fundraising again. But I am very conscious that we have to be incredibly sensitive to the world around us. There will be lots of other charities that will be in a very difficult place. We've postponed our telethon to September, but what will the world look like in September? Will that be a telethon that we would do just for the school, or will it be something we do with some of our community partners? You know, will it even not be wise at that point? I think those are things that at this point, they're all still up in the air. And I think if you talk to me again in 6 weeks' time, Lou, they might all look very different.
I think that's a really good point, though, about the fact that actually this is an evolving situation. So actually, within 2 weeks, who would have known we would be here 2 weeks ago? And I think, as you say, things will evolve and change. But what I took away from that, Susie, is a really clear idea about trying to do some focused sort of work at the minute around that. I love the idea of the pandemic papers, and congratulations to your archive as well. But having sort of focus for the engagement and a reason to beyond just that sort of, as you say, that chatting and support, and recognising the support for the wider community is really important. But then also still looking ahead and looking at those opportunities and looking at what might possibly happen in the future, and being willing to ask those questions as well, which is really important. It really has been a pleasure, Susie. Thank you so much for sharing where you're at, as you say, week two of the coronavirus. It's really appreciated, and I'm sure all our members will appreciate hearing how you're moving forward. So thank you.
Nice to speak to you, Lou.